What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to episode 4 of the Royal Hour. I, of course, am Joseph Royal. I will be leading you through this adventure that was the World Series, as well as the rest of the things that have been going on in the sports world. How have you guys been doing? I know I've been busy, extremely busy. I've been trying to wait till the World Series was over so I can do another video and fully break it down. But yeah, man, we are back. And as I said, we will be talking about the World Series, the highly anticipated World Series between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the New York Yankees. We will also be talking about week 7 and 8 of the NFL season. We'll be talking about two of the fans that got ejected from game, I believe it was 5 of the World Series. And we will be talking about some early NBA thoughts, some thoughts about, you know, how things have been going early on in the NBA season. So before we get into any of that, please like, share, and subscribe. It really helps this channel. It helps everything that I'm trying to do with this channel and, more importantly, this podcast in general. Send this out to your friends, your coworkers, you know, your baby mamas, your baby daddies, whoever it is that's listening. Please send it out to as many people as possible. I really appreciate it. So let's get into weeks 7 and 8 of the NFL season. I don't want to go over everything. I'm not going to go over every single game in particular. I know we're entering into week 9. I do want to talk about a couple things, though. The Broncos, on Thursday, they had beaten the New Orleans Saints 33-10 on that Thursday night game a couple weeks ago. The Broncos are starting to put together some wins. They're starting to look better offensively. I know on the last podcast, I did say that I wanted to see a bit more offensively from them. It seems like Sean Payton is starting to open up the offense a bit more for Bo Nix. And, you know, instilling some more confidence and, I guess, himself having more confidence in Bo Nix to run this offense in its entirety has really opened up the offense. And the Saints, on the other hand, because of that Derek Carr injury, are just on a huge downslide. I also want to talk about the Jets. The Jets had a pretty embarrassing loss to the Steelers, 37-15, in Russell Wilson's first start for the Steelers, which I did say I did not agree with them pulling Justin Fields and putting in Russell Wilson, despite the fact that he did win the job in the preseason. I just felt like they should have stuck with the hot hand. As it stands right now, Russell Wilson is playing pretty well. He is able to throw the ball down the field a bit more accurately than Justin Fields is at this point in their careers. So because of that, once again, it's another situation where the Steelers are able to open their offense up a bit more. On the other hand, the Jets, you know, the first week that Todd Downing was calling plays, they looked a lot more promising, a lot more quick-hitting plays, bubble screens, smoke screens, just a lot of quick-hitting plays that could allow the receivers to run after the catch. This week it seemed like they had, or I should say in the Steelers game, I'll get into this week in a couple minutes, but this week against the Steelers that they played them on Sunday night, they just really had Aaron Rodgers holding the ball a bit too long. I mean, this was Devontae Adams' debut. I know you got to give it a couple weeks, but we've had a couple weeks to kind of see what this offense is going to look like. Nathaniel Hackett, it is his system, but Todd Downing is calling plays, and he should have really, in my opinion, stuck to some of those quick-hitting plays that they were doing against the Bills in that game, the very first game that Todd Downing called. The Jets' defense is taking a step back, obviously, because Jeff Albrecht is now the head coach, so he has more responsibility. He can't just focus strictly on the defense. Their defense is taking a bit of a step back, so that's a cause for concern. I do also want to talk about, there wasn't much else from week 7 that I really want to talk about. I do want to get into week 8. The Jets took another bad loss. They took a loss to the Patriots on the road, 25-22. This was a game that Drake May, I believe, was knocked out of. He had a concussion. Jacoby Brissett came in, went 15 for 24, 432 yards. He didn't throw any touchdowns, but he went relatively untouched. He only got sacked once On the other hand, you know, Aaron Rodgers went 17 for 28, 233, two touchdowns, no picks. Overall, the offense looked a bit better, but at the same time, once again, this defense is struggling right now, giving up 25 points to the New England Patriots. I mean, the Patriots are a bottom four team in the league right now. They just are. The Jets are in trouble. I don't think they really have any chance at this point to make the playoffs unless they go on a serious run. And it's very worrisome because, you know, obviously Devontae Adams didn't come over to this team for them to miss the playoffs and then have to kind of restart this entire process next year. Right now, it's not looking good for Jeff Ulbrich being the head coach next year. And you have to imagine who really wants that job after you saw that Robert Saleh got fired during the regular season. So, you know, which is pretty rare for Woody Johnson, but definitely a cause for concern with the Jets. I also want to talk about the Lions. The Lions have been rolling. I think they're the best team in the league right now. Week 8, they beat the Titans 52-14. I know you're going to say it's the Titans, but the Lions have been rolling over pretty much everybody. Jared Goff, 12 for 15, 85 yards, 3 touchdowns and no picks. When he's able to only throw the ball 15 times, 3 incompletions and 3 touchdowns, I mean, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs, 11 carries, 127 yards. It's just, it's scary. I mean, you know, unfortunately, Aiden Hutchinson got hurt a couple weeks ago, and he'll be out for the remainder of the season and possibly part of next year. But they seem to have not missed a beat. In the trade deadline coming up, they said that there have been rumors that they will be getting a pass rusher. You know, who knows who that could possibly be? I mean, Max Crosby, pretty much the Raiders have already said they're not going to trade him. So, you know, maybe it's Za'Darius Smith. Who knows? But the Lions have been rolling. I also want to talk about the Commanders. There was a pretty crazy play in that game to end one of the more highly anticipated matchups between the two top picks at quarterback, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. They both played pretty well, and in the end, number 29 on the Bears, I don't even know the kid's name, he was too busy taunting the crowd in Washington to pay attention to the fact that he should be over there trying to bat the ball down on this Hail Mary, ends up batting it backwards, and one of the Commanders receivers ends up catching it for the touchdown in one of the more dramatic, shocking, I would say, Hail Mary completions to end a game that I've ever seen. You know, the Bears don't look bad right now. Washington obviously looks far better. I think they have a lot more pieces in place to help Jaden Daniels be successful. At the same time, Caleb Williams is playing pretty well. I mean, he didn't have a great completion percentage in this game. He went 10 for 24, but at the same time, he's showing a lot of promise. He's showing why he was drafted so high. So I want to talk about that game. There is one more I want to talk about. We're going to get into a bit of what's going on with these quarterbacks that are being benched. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But I want to jump that off with talking about the Colts and Texans game, because there was a notable play in this game where Anthony Richardson had to scramble to avoid a sack. And, I mean, it looked like he ran about 30 yards and, you know, a 5-yard interval. Just all that space in between him and the line of scrimmage where he's scrambling around trying to avoid a pass rusher, running back another direction and throwing the ball away. It just, you know, clearly took a lot out of him, and he ended up going to the sideline asking for, you know, out of the game and taking himself out, which is a huge no-no in the NFL, obviously. And now we know that he has been benched in favor of Joe Flacco, which I think is stupid. And another thing I'll say is if the reason he's being benched is because of the fact that he asked out of that game, there needs to be somebody at the top of the food chain that fires this head coach, because that has to be the dumbest thing you could possibly bench a guy for that needs reps, that has not played a lot since high school, let alone college. And, you know, he got injured last year, and now you are sitting a guy down because your short-term solution is Joe Flacco. He's not your long-term solution. you have a kid who eventually is going to be starting football games for your team, and you're sitting him down in a season that, in my opinion, isn't going anywhere. What is your end game? You're going to get into the playoffs and lose in the first round? You're going to lose in a wild card round? That's your goal? I mean, sure, if you're trying to save jobs, if you're trying to save the head coach's job, then maybe that's your goal. But ultimately, as an organization, is your goal to lose in a wild card round or get this close to making the playoffs over playing your young quarterback who needs reps, who needs experience? I think it's a brain dead, decision to sit Anthony Richardson. Now, I want to get into a little bit about these quarterbacks that are being benched and that have kind of been abandoned, so to speak, in the league, because this is becoming a big problem. A lot of people are blaming development. I don't think it's a development thing. I think it's a patience thing, and I think it's something that seriously needs to be addressed, because a lot of these teams are rushing quarterbacks into situations where they don't necessarily need to play, but they play and they don't look so great because they have a terrible roster around them, and then they abandon them and pretend like the quarterback is the problem. And I just don't think that is the case. You know, Sam Block at the Block Spot on Twitter put out a post that said Anthony Richardson is 22 benched, Bryce Young is 23 benched, Trey Lance is 24 benched, Justin Fields is 25 benched, Will Levis is 25 benched, Zach Wilson is 25 benched, Mac Jones is 26 benched, Kenny Pickett is 26 benched. The NFL has a development problem. I don't think it has a development problem. I think it has a patience problem. You know, a lot of these quarterbacks, once again, they land in very bad situations and, quite frankly, bad franchises. Now, Trey Lance would be the exception as far as bad franchises is concerned. Zach Wilson, you know, everybody knows the Jets' history with quarterbacks. Mac Jones, Tom Brady led that team for 20-some-odd years, I think 20 years exactly, as one of the greatest dynasties in the history of football, right? And then you had a guy who doesn't know how to mature quarterbacks, and Bill Belichick. I'm sorry, everybody can hype up Bill Belichick all they want to. Defensive genius, sure. Quarterback whisperer, no. So, you know, Mac Jones was another situation where they benched him and Bailey Zappe in the same game, so you basically ruined two careers in one game. That was the bright idea that Bill Belichick had. Kenny Pickett was another one on the Steelers with, you know, not a really good situation. The offensive line was kind of being remade, which is why Najee Harris also struggled some earlier in his career. And, you know, all those things added up to Kenny Pickett being thrown into the fire too quickly and getting benched. Bryce Young on a terrible franchise. The Panthers are a terrible franchise with a terrible front office. He was benched for Andy Dalton this year. How's that going? I've already talked about that several times on this podcast. Justin Fields, they traded his targets away and then expected him to still succeed, by the way, in a new offense. So he was benched. The list goes on and on. My point is, teams need to be more patient with these quarterbacks. They don't have a clear plan when they draft these quarterbacks. It's obvious. And as a result, they're ruining a lot of careers by rushing these guys into play when they, quite frankly, are not experienced enough, might be playing behind an offensive line that will put them in harm's way, or they have a quarterback that is the better option at that time where the kid can sit back and learn. But when you put him in and then you bench him, that just ruins his confidence. So that's my little spiel on that. In general, these past 2 weeks have been very interesting as far as the teams that I pay the most attention to, you know, the games that I get in my market, the Patriots and the Jets, you know, two teams that you would think are heading in opposite directions seem to be heading in the same direction right now, which is downward. Kansas City pulled out a close one against the Raiders, 27-20. And like I said, you know, the Panthers lost to the Broncos, 28-14. I'm sorry. So the Broncos are just rolling. They're rolling right now. We'll see how for real they are as the season goes on. Same thing with the Bills, 31-10. They scraped up Seattle in Seattle, 31-10. So it's very interesting. It's still, I mean, we're about halfway through the season, So we will see what happens with that. But I do want to move on and talk about the World Series. The Dodgers closed out the World Series last night in five games. I'm sorry, before when I said the fans did that crap that they did, that was in game four. So, yes, the Dodgers finished off the Yankees in five games. And the story of this series, which I kept saying over and over again on Twitter, was really it came down to the fact that the Dodgers stars were showing up and the Yankees stars were not showing up. That's what it was earlier in the series to me. You had a very close game. You had a very close game that realistically ended in Freddie Freeman with a walk-off in that game one. And I think from there, the Yankees just kind of went into a hole as far as their approach to, you know, at bats. They were letting a lot of fastballs middle-middle just go right by them without even giving it a look. And then they'd get the same fastball later in the at-bat and they'd be behind and they would swing through it. Or they'd be way behind it. And it just, their approach never really, it never really worked for this series as far as like sitting on the breaking balls and kind of letting the fastballs go. I don't know where they figured that was the best route to go, because, you know, at some point you knew that they were going to start swinging at those fastballs, which is what game four pretty much was. It was the Yankees saying, okay, we can just murder these fastballs that you're continuing to throw us middle-middle. Because at that point, I guess the Dodgers thought, well, they haven't been swinging at them, so let's keep throwing them. But Judge eventually started to find his way between game four and game five, which was great, but a bit too late. And then, of course, you know, I can sort of, you know, Freddie Freeman delivered big time in the series, hit a home run, I believe, in three straight games, just killing him. He was the World Series MVP, but like I said, you know, Mookie Betts was another star on their team. You know, Shohei didn't play well. I'm not going to make any excuses for him. I know he had shoulder issues, but he didn't play well. He didn't bat well at all. He was swinging, in my opinion, he was overswinging at some pitches. You know, swinging through them or just out in front, too far in front, just overswinging. It seems like he was coming out of his mechanics a little bit. But overall, Mookie and Freddie Freeman made key plays when they needed to ensure that their team had momentum going into each game, starting out each game, and their hits were all crucial. You know, their fielding, Mookie made several great fielding plays that saved runs or saved hits or just saved crucial situations going in favor of the Yankees. But I do want to talk about Game 5 because a lot of people believe that, you know, in Game 5, the Yankees had that game in hand. And even myself, I was thinking, wow, okay, this is really going to go back to L.A. And then the Yankees started to shoot themselves in the foot. You know, Judge drops that easy routine fly ball. And then I believe it was Volpe throws, was it Volpe or Gleyber Torres? They threw a ball to Jazz that was way too hot because of how close they were, and Jazz fumbles it, and boom, now you have a runner at third that, you know, you could have got out of the inning. And then you had a situation where there was a ground ball to first, and Gerrit Cole doesn't go to cover the first base, right? And all these things just started to snowball, and the Dodgers got back in the game. You know, the Yankees found their bats. They found the right approach at the plate. They forced a lot more walks. They got deeper into counts. They didn't waste high-leverage situations. All these things were true until those errors on the defensive side started to happen. And then from there, the more experienced team, especially in championship situations, the more experienced team and the better manager ended up winning the game and ultimately the series. So that was my opinion on the World Series. I do want to talk about these two absolute idiots from Game 4. So in Game 4, there was a foul ball hit by a Yankee where Mookie Betts goes over to the close to the wall to try to, make this spectacular catch, and the ball is heading towards the wall, and he goes over and tries to catch it, and two idiot fans decide they're gonna interfere in one of the worst ways I've ever seen them. He catches the ball, and this fat, five neck having, five cheeseburger eating, just frumpy douchebag goes and tries to yank the ball out of his glove while his idiot friend, the drunk piece of crap, is trying to pull his arm away, pull Mookie's arm away so he can't get the ball. Then, when the umpire comes over and declares, the runner out, then they're arguing, well, he came over into our field of play, and this is our side of the wall. You kidding me? Are you kidding me? I've talked about fans before on this podcast. I've talked about spectators getting out of hand on this podcast before. This is just another example. This is just another example of fans getting overzealous and thinking that they're a part of the game. And for the people that are going to defend them, oh, how do you know they were drunk? Come on, bro. You've seen the still shots. That dude was buzzed out of his mind. And that's not an excuse, okay? Alcohol is not an excuse. It is your fault you got drunk. Anyway, so these two idiots, they get ejected. They go to a bar. All of a sudden, they're local heroes. ESPN is interviewing them, glorifying them, acting like these guys, I think one of the ESPN reporters called him a beaut. Oh, this guy, he was a beaut. Oh, he said he was going to fight for his team. And when the ball goes over the wall, he's going to play D. Security should have hauled them over the wall, and Mookie Betts should have been able to introduce his spikes on his cleats to their faces, both of them. I'm tired of fans getting overzealous and doing things like this, to the point where, at one point, it was reported they were going to be allowed into game five. And then we heard that the Major League Baseball was asking the Yankees to please ban them. Are you kidding me? They shouldn't be allowed in another Major League Baseball stadium. Not this series or any other series, any other season. They should have their season tickets revoked. And we're glorifying them, writing articles about them for grabbing an athlete while he's trying to make a play, grabbing his arm, twisting his arm, trying to pull his glove off. Are you kidding me? Is this what society's come to? That some fat loser in the crowd thinks he can put his hands on an athlete. I mean, disgusting. It's amazing to me. It's just like I am a full advocate for athletes being allowed to lay hands on somebody's fans. I've been an advocate of that for years. Okay, when you come into the wrestling ring, they're still allowed to beat the living crap out of you, and I advocate for that. More people need the crap beat out of them. That's my opinion. And if you want to call me an advocate for violence, you can call me whatever you want to. I'm sorry. You put your hands on that man. You deserve whatever you get. You kidding me? You're gonna reach over, grab this dude's glove, and the other idiot grabs his hand or his arm, tries to pry it away. You got fans talking about, oh, this generation is so soft. Soft? Really? That's what you're calling it? That's what you're calling people who are calling this stupid, who are calling this inappropriate. You're calling them soft? Fans think they can show up to games and do whatever the hell they want to. And that's the problem. People need to be made examples of. That's what needs to happen. You need to make examples out of these idiots that like to do stupid stuff, that like to say stupid stuff and do stupid things at sporting events. That's what needs to happen. But I'm going to get off my soapbox now. I don't talk about that anymore. You know, the series is over. Those idiots are wherever they are, drowning their sorrows in a bottle of Jack somewhere in a dark room, playing George Michael. So, whatever. The last thing I want to talk about before we go, I do want to talk about the NBA. The NBA season kicked off about, I'd say, I don't know, 2 weeks ago? A week ago? I don't remember at this point. It's been about a week, I'd say. Week and change. And there have been a lot of changes on, you know, a lot of these rosters. Some you might have forgotten about because they happened so early in the offseason. But one thing that has not changed is that the Boston Celtics are still extremely dominant. They're still the best team in the league. And the reason why, to me, the Celtics are so difficult to defend, a lot of people talk about the volume of threes they take. I don't think it's the volume of threes. Part of the reason why they get so many open threes is because their dribble drives, they get so deep in the paint, and they're, you know, they have five guys on the court who are all able to beat their guy off the dribble, you know, get the defense to collapse, and then cause scrambles where they start swinging the ball and teams are forced to adjust. And that's how they get open threes, right? It's part ball movement, but it's really the dribble drives. When Tatum's beating guys off the dribble, when Jaylen Brown's beating guys off the dribble, Derek White, Drew Holiday, even Horford sometimes after he pump fakes and gets into the paint, that's how you get those open threes, right? And because Tatum and Jaylen Brown are so dangerous in isolation, that also makes them more difficult to guard. You have Drew who can get to the basket or, you know, hit step back jump shots. You have Derek White who can do the same, right? So not only can they create their own shot, but they can then hit standstill threes when it's their time to do that. You have Peyton Pritchard off the bench who can create his own shot, hit standstill threes. You have Hauser, who I believe is hurt right now. He can kind of create his own shot, and he can hit standstill threes, right? But at the same time, he can also draw the defense. He can get into the paint and make that extra pass. Xavier Tillman can hit those open threes. And we don't even have Porzingis back. That's the part that's scary. So we know the Celtics are still dominant, right? But the Lakers are another interesting story because obviously they fired Darvin Ham and they hired J.J. Redick, which a lot of people question. But J.J. Redick, as he's called himself, he's a sicko. He is a basketball sicko. That dude is a basketball savant. He eats, sleeps, and breathes basketball. The new fluid offense that the Lakers are running, a lot more pace, a lot more ball movement, a lot more body movement. It's beautiful to watch. Defensively, they're a lot more alert. They're a lot more active. It's amazing. It's like night and day from last year. His handling of lineups, his handling of defenses, or not defenses, handling of, you know, lineup sets and, you know, out of bounds, out of timeout sets that he calls, late game situations, all of those things, like night and day between him and Darvin Ham. And it's not to bag on Darvin Ham, it's just the fact that J.J. Redick is at a totally different level of intellect as far as the game of basketball is concerned. The Lakers are going to be dangerous this year. They're not even going to be in the play-in this year, in my opinion. If LeBron and AD can stay healthy, the Lakers are going to be one of the better teams in the league this year. I'm not saying they're going to be top four or top five. They will be a top 10 to 15 team in the league this year, not just in the West, in the league. Austin Rivers is playing very well in his complimentary role. Same with Rui Hachimura. Jackson Hayes brings energy off the bench. They don't even have Vanderbilt back yet, I don't believe. D'Angelo Russell, I don't like how streaky of a shooter he is or how streaky of a scorer he is, but he can distribute the ball. He can hit knockdown threes, you know, spot up threes. He is needed for that starting lineup. But yeah, man, I Orlando's looking great earlier in the season. Early in the season, they're looking great. Not too sure how they'll finish in the East, but Orlando right now is looking great. You know, Banchero just had a 50 ball the other night. I think he had 32 in the first half. So there are a lot of teams that have improved this year. Detroit's not looking as bad this year. They look like they're improving, but they're very young. So, yeah, man, I'm very excited about this NBA season. I'm not going to get too much into breakdowns because, like I said, it's very early. But I just wanted to give my brief thoughts about the NBA season so far. And I will be doing more videos on the NBA as things come up, you know, reviewing certain games. I'll review, you know, similar to how I do the NFL, I'll review more games each week on the podcast because, you know, I'm more of an NBA fan than an NFL fan. I love football, but NBA was always my first love. So I love basketball, like, at any level. Once college basketball starts, I might start to talk about that too. Cooper Flagg at Duke. I'm a fan of Duke, so, you know, I'm definitely excited to see how he does. But, yeah, man, I mean, you know, just wanted a nice little quick episode, talk a little bit about the World Series. I know I bagged on baseball in one of the first episodes on here, but I can't enjoy baseball when it's, you know, high-quality baseball or high-stakes baseball, which the World Series is. But, yeah, man, that's all I got this week. I will be back next week with a new episode and maybe some shorts in between. If anything arises before then, I'll definitely make a video about it. But until then, you guys take care. Peace.